IT Live, Academy Sports and Outdoors, Texas Homer, Paul Wadlington, Tuesday Show. All right, we're going to get after it today. What's the office? Why say many words when few words do trick? All right, we're going to talk the SEC edges. We have a lot of SEC talent at the edge position. It was fun reading Paul's article, and then Paul also gave me an excuse to write things down on a Google Sheets and rank numbers. So thank you, Paul. I'm getting into my season form here. So we can look at that too. We can see some discrepancies in play styles, meaning true pass rushers versus well-rounded edges that can do both type of thing. And then we have an article on who's really a playoff contender. We have an on-three preview of the bowl games saying who's going to make the first round quarterfinals, all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about that. And then Ross Dellinger dropped some NIL numbers about the growth of the industry and how they're going to rev share allocate, which is going to matter, guys. If you're interested in recruiting, you kind of need to understand the way of the world here too. It's getting to where I'm always jealous of the NFL tubers because they get to do all this market cap stuff and all these numbers crunching. Most people don't like it, but you're going to have to do that for college recruiting too. AR, good morning. Drink every time you see a tweet from a Texas fan freak out about recruiting this summer. Absolutely. Cotton, what's up, dude? Justin Wells, good morning, man. All right, Paul, no games. We're going straight into these edges here.
No.
Yeah.
No, prepare me for it.
No, we're doing
it. Just go straight in.
Yeah.
They're too good, Connor.
All right. Paul ranked. Are these rank order or do you just list them?
They're actually pretty much rank order.
Okay. So number one.
This is how they rank.
Okay.
I mean, like, I don't really want to hear any feedback from the chat. Yeah. I don't want to hear any.
Do not argue with him.
Don't argue with me about any of this, or this is going to be a really bad live.
Yeah. Do not argue about his rankings. And if I knew anything about college fans, they would never argue about
rankings. Oh, yeah. They're super agreeable.
Yeah. They're known for that. All right. So number one, Paul ranks Colin Simmons. I mean, just such an overrated player. We'll see. You're going to see his numbers. He has really cool stuff for being a young guy, but Colin Simmons at number one. Defend your position, Paul.
Probably the most dynamic pure edge rusher other than the guy who's coming after him, which you actually have a pretty good debate.
Yeah.
But he played less than 500 snaps last year. That's what people don't realize. You know, Steve Sarkisian was talking about this in an interview, and he's like, you know, we're going to do a lot of different things on defense, but one of them is that Colin Simmons needs to be a starter.
Correct.
You know, he can't be off the field when it's like a meaningful play being run by the offense.
For sure.
And you even see, he said like, that he had less than 500 snaps, 9 sacks, 46 pressures, which if you're not as familiar, a lot of people use stacks as sort of their rubric for understanding if an edge guy is good. That can be deceptive, right? Mm-hmm. Pressures can be a more reliable stat in terms of, like, are you affecting the passing game? Are you affecting where the quarterback sits in the pocket? Stuff like that. He had 46. Basically, that's a really high number for the number of snaps he got. Stylistically, this is a guy who's a thoroughbred who thinks he's a workhorse.
For sure.
You know, those big European draft horses that you hitch up to a wagon? Colin thinks he's that, and he's a twitchy, nervous thoroughbred
yeah.
who can just run around Belmont all day. But, you know, he really has these elite gifts, but he carries himself like a walk-on who's trying to earn a scholarship. And that's a very valuable thing in the edge. You know, all these guys, one thing they'll have in common is a motor, but Colin's motor runs at a different level. And I think we're going to see that this year.
100%. And his ability to make Trey Moore, who also might make an appearance on this list, have to look at linebacker potentially because we want Colin Simmons at that slot.
That's right.
So that's a big part too. In the run game, like Paul said, he never gives up on plays. He'll chase guys down 10 yards down the field. And the first step on him is, I can only describe as psychic. And he's just a step ahead of these guys. And I always wait. I'm like, all right, they're going to mess with the snap count. Like they're going to get the freshman, you know, and they don't. So he's two steps into his rush before the tackle can even rise up to take a step.
Well, what's funny, he's 6'3", 240, which in the modern game is a little small on the edge. Mm-hmm. And so you'd think, okay, run at him. That doesn't work very well either because he's too quick and he sort of just teleports through the blocker and gets the running back. If anything, he has to work on a little bit. And I was doing my research for my Thinking Texas Football 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, the 13th annual, Connor.
Yeah.
And one thing that was interesting is he did have 9 missed tackles last year. I went and looked and reviewed most of those. Almost all of them were being too early on the play. He's so twitchy that the play, he would try to jump it before it develops. And then he gets himself at a bad angle and he's not able to make a play, you know, properly. So if anything, this is a hilarious thing to say, he would do better sometimes playing slower.
Yeah.
And letting something develop. But other than that, this is one of the best edges we've ever had at the University of Texas by far. And for him to play like that as a true freshman is remarkable.
Absolutely. All right, let's continue. So Dylan Stewart, they released, I can't remember, a couple weeks ago, once again, another ranking, and the fans argued about it. So I think they had Dylan Stewart as the number one edge and number one NFL draft board edge, and then Colin Simmons projected behind him in a year.
So they're the same age.
Yeah, so in 2 years when they come out.
Right. 2027.
Yeah, so they had Dylan Stewart ahead of him. So
that's defensible, and here's why.
I was going to say.
Yeah. 6'5", and he's really long. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something the NFL is going to love. Because he's 6'5", I think he's going to probably carry 260 eventually. But he is incredibly quick. Are you able to play the Twitter video?
No, it'll flag.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But imagine this.
Imagine. Right?
The tackle really tries.
Long, quick guy.
The tackle tries to block him. He's really and fast.
He doesn't.
But that's the important part where Paul's talking about his length. He has the arm to kind of run by the quarterback and yep. still get him.
He had 51 pressures last year, 7 sacks. One thing to look for is the Gamecocks. If you guys didn't watch South Carolina at all, man, they had a great defense. Just really impressive. And they basically had 3 NFL guys starting with Stewart. Those 3 guys are all gone. So if I'm an offensive coordinator, Connor, guess who's my focus in this defense this year?
So I was going to say, when we're talking about these young edges, Simmons, Stewart, who come on the scene, right? Year one, they don't get a ton of respect because they're new guys, right? Then they get their names plastered all over videos like ours and stuff like that. And then teams are going to want to work towards them. Texas has Anthony Hill that can fire a gap if you're not paying attention to him. So we have other options that will benefit if they decide to divert resources. But with some of these other edges, you got to see, you know, who are they paired with? Because if they do start double teaming Stewart, somebody else has the ability to shine if they're capable. That's and you right. saw it. You saw it with Sark when we played Will Anderson. You know, you can. It's not ideal, but you can divert resources. But then on the flip side, they had Dallas Turner. So really, what you want there is this pairing. Because that's going to unlock the other guys. So I am interested to see when the young edges get really on the scene and everybody knows who they are, if the sophomore slump continues.
Yeah, and in South Carolina, if you get a chance just to passively watch an interesting football team, they probably have 3 of the biggest freaks in college football. So the quarterback, Lenore Sellers, 245 and like slick, he's agile. He's got great feet.
He can duck sacks.
He can duck. He can make jump cuts. I mean, he's crazy. And then they've got a receiver. Do you know about Nick Harbor? Mm-mm. Okay, so Nick Harbor is a U.S. Olympics qualifier.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
200. Yeah, yeah. He's 6'5", 235, and he's run in a competition. So this isn't like high school nonsense. He's run a 10-1-1.
That's insane, dude.
And he plays receiver, but he doesn't really know how to play receiver. But last year, he came on a little bit. This year, he skipped the Olympic trials just to be all football. And so that's another freak that they've got out on the edge. So South Carolina, very fun team to watch if you like watching freaks run around. They're not going to be as good as they were last year because that defense is gone for the most part. But anyway, little bug in your ear.
Stewart is going to prevent us from going first and second overall back to back with Arch and Simmons. Huh? Yeah, hopefully that's not the case. But yeah, he's the real deal. So when Texas fans get mad, that, you know, we're not the only one with players.
Yeah, there's other teams with players, and believe me, to me the top tier here is Colin Simmons and Dylan Stewart, and then the next two are the next tier, and then after that there's another drop off.
So Florida continuing to have some dudes, and also they're coming on and recruiting. Man, we keep showing up in battles with them. Florida Gators are going to have as long as they can win enough to keep their structure together and not fire this next year. Florida is really coming on and should have a bright future too. But this is Tyreek Sapp, 6'2", a short guy, but 270.
Yeah, probably barely 6'2", 270. And if you're going to be a little undersized edge in terms of height and length, you better be really powerful, and you better have the ability to get so low that your lack of length actually becomes a strength, if that makes any sense. Because you're actually playing under the offensive tackle. And I don't just mean like low man wins. I mean, you're able to run and run the arc so low that a big, tall offensive tackle can't really get his hands on you in an efficient way. And so Sapp is just really powerful. He can line up anywhere on the line for Florida. And he's a stack and shed guy. Like, you can play him in a four technique. Yeah. He'll jack up a 330-pound offensive tackle. And he's also a good pass rusher. Imagine in this clip a really powerful guy that can move like Dwight Freeney.
So here's what's interesting about him. His true pass set win percentage, meaning that we're throwing out screens, we're throwing out RPOs. We're talking about the team is obviously trying to pass drop back passing. He's not great here. He only wins 15%, so that's third to the bottom. But he still has put up 8 sacks with that low individual win rate. And what Paul said, he's number 2 rank in run defense.
Yeah.
So he's a big guy, and he can hold up. So he's a well-rounded player as well, and that's also going to be important because some of these pass rushers are what I would call DPRs, designated pass rushers, but they're a liability in the run game. Sapp is not that. He's a well-rounded player, and that's going to matter too.
That's a great point. And one thing, if you want to, so I'm high on Florida this year, despite having a ridiculous schedule. They have just a brutal schedule again, but I'm really high on them. And one of them reasons, of course, is DJ Lagway and Jaden Baugh on offense. But on defense, Florida, I mean, I think people forget this is one of the superpowers of college football.
Yeah.
And it's people forget. I mean, it's funny, inside Texas, we were having a discussion of like, what are the best programs in college football? Not just like, how good's the team right now, but like the program. And I'm like, Florida is obviously in the top 10. And people are like, no, I think it's like, dude, you've forgotten. Like, yeah. So one of the things that was the hallmark of Florida in the days were freaks on the defensive line. Literally, the freak played on their defensive line. Caleb Barnes is like a really good defensive tackle. They've got Tyreek Sapp. They're starting to get those guys. Mm-hmm. And as Connor said, they are our constant competition. Part of it is because we have similar tastes as programs, and we have similar sort of like citizenship requirements. And we keep running into Florida on the recruiting trail, both in Texas and in Florida. So they're going to be a team like Notre Dame that we just keep battling over and over because we like similar types of guys.
Yeah, and it's been a pretty fair fight. Like, we'll steal a guy from them. They'll steal a guy from us. It's going to be bright. Are these both strong and weak side edges?
Yes. Yeah. So just anyone who plays on the edge of the defense, and this could be, you could be in a 3-4 outside linebacker. You could be 4-3 guy. I'd argue that if you're in a 3-man front, you're still an edge if you're not the nose, right? But you've got a different requirement, right, than a guy who's playing in a wide 9 of 4-3. Like, that's, you're living in a very different world. But to me, you're still on the edge of the defense, and you still have similar requirements.
Yeah, and you'll see the body types, right? Like, when we're talking about Falk, 6'6", 285 is different than 6'3", 240. You know?
That's a key. So this position, you've got a range of 4 or 5 inches of height and 40, 50 pounds in the edge room. Yeah. And There's a lot of different body types, a lot of different play styles, and that's what makes this so fun. The conference by far has the best edges in the country. And this is one of the best edge groups in terms of depth I've ever seen in the Southeastern Conference. So if you don't have a left tackle, if you don't have tackles in general, you're in a lot of trouble. And I made the observation that poor Kentucky plays like seven of these 10 guys.
Yeah.
So they did get new tackles in the offseason, and those two tackles are going to be put to work.
So we have Kildrick Falk at Auburn, like we said, 6'6", 285.
Yep.
He's
a fun what I love about Falk. So I don't like big jumbo edges typically. It's like, you know, very exciting to be like, our edge is 290. And it's like, well, so you just told me that he can't really get around a tackle who's good. Or if he does get a flush, he can't finish the play because he just lacks the foot speed, quickness, change of direction to finish. That's not the case with Kildrick Falk. This guy is amazing. I watch him play, and it's like, you know, your big, sweet, giant, goofy dog who doesn't know his own strength, and they just knock down your fence one day, and, yeah. You know, they're standing over it, wagging their tail. That's Kildrick Falk. He's going to be a first-round draft pick. And he, if we could run this clip, I want you to imagine a guy who's 6'6", 285. He eats up space. He is not just all bull rush. He has a great bull rush, but he can close distance. He eats up space. And it looks like he's not doing anything. And he takes two strides and he's batting the ball down. Like, he is just very gifted. So Auburn has a lot of upside potentially this year. We say that every year, but they really do. And one of the reasons is a guy like Kildrick Falk.
So same thing, low true pass set win percentage. He's second to last, only winning, like affecting the quarterback 12% of the time. But once again, 9 sacks, which is tied for first out of the 10 edges. So it's weird. He's effective without being efficient. So yeah. His big thing is like, how does he become efficient? That's going to be the big move. Because like Paul said, it's a little bit bull in a china shop. It's raw, but all the tools are there. But on the flip side, he's the third ranked run defender.
Yeah.
So he's giving you help in both sides of the game.
I included a second clip below that shows just how hard he plays and his effort level and his quickness. Just defending the run, eating up gaps, compressing, pushing a tight end down, all that kind of stuff that's good edge play. Go join Inside Texas, or if you're on, you know, if you're an Inside Texas member, go click on that because it really shows how active he is. He's a little different than like those big jumbo edges for A&M who would kind of go through lulls during a game where they, you know, like Texas didn't have any problem with those guys at all.
Or it was pure bull rush. They didn't have much.
After That's that. Right. They don't have much for them. Kildrick Falk is another level from those guys.
Yeah.
Similar thing. LT Overton from Alabama. Very similar giant edge. They use him all over the defense. He's 6'5", 285. He's incredibly powerful. Former Aggie player. And he was, if you go look at his old PFF grades at A&M, he kind of sucked. And then he went to Alabama, and he's really improved his stock. Not the first guy who's done that, right? Walter Nolan, similar. Kind of felt like he might have been overrated at A&M. Went to Ole Miss for 1 year, and they're like, nope, he's actually that good. He just wasn't, had a bad head coach. So LT Overton, very, very powerful, very good against the run. He can get pressures, but he's not a guy, because of his size, he maybe isn't always going to finish.
I was going to say, only 3 sacks, so second to last in sacks. You could
play him all over the D-line, and he creates for others.
Yeah, and he's second in hurries.
Yeah.
So Paul says like he can affect, he wins. He's 27.6% on true pass set win percentage, which is second.
That's very high.
Yeah. So he's affecting the quarterbacks. He's just not getting there to finish. Even this sack here, I can't show it, but it's because the quarterback holds the ball for like 7 seconds like an idiot and he just crushes the quarterback.
The quarterback learns a lesson.
The quarterback starts like backing up as Overton's behind him and he just kills him. But really, that's not like a super earned sack. It's a dumb quarterback play. So he's not finishing a ton, but he's affecting the quarterback as good as anybody with hurries and all that kind of stuff. And he's a pretty good. He's fourth in run defense, too. So you're having this kind of overall. When I'm seeing these 285, 265 guys, I want to see that, you know, their strong side or good in the run too.
Yeah.
To bring value.
If he played at Texas, he'd be a starting defensive tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this is a fun player because this is an example of a DPR. So this is R. Mason Thomas, undersized at 6'2", 250. And then, Paul, if you want to give your pitch on him, I'll kind of explain some of his weakness, too.
Yeah, so OU fans have been talking about this guy for, 3 years? Mm-hmm. And I remember I'd watch him, and I'd be like, no. I mean, he just runs up the field and is trying to get sacks and pressures. He's not playing properly, and he gets out of position. And when he'd play good tackles, he'd disappear. And then he'd go have 4 sacks against Temple or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Last year, I thought he was good. He's really improved. I don't think he's great at anything. I just think he's become well-rounded, and he's very active. Good production, obviously, 9 sacks, 36 pressures, or 35 pressures. Not always great against the run. He can get careless.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what do your stats show, Connor?
So it's the same thing. R. Mason Thomas is somebody I would love to have on third down and not much else. So he's going to be really good when you're backed up. So I think he has 9 sacks on the year. Let me see here. R. Mason. Yeah, 9 sacks on the year. He's pretty good in quarterback hits. He's not great in hurries. He's dead last in hurries. For the edges, so basically he's a little undersized, right? So if he beats his tackle, he's fast and he'll get the sack.
Yep.
But he's struggling to beat the tackles and affect the quarterback.
You know what was weird, Connor? His 2 best games that I watched were Alabama and LSU. Who has
those are tackles?
Good tackles.
Yeah.
So that's odd, right?
Isn't that weird? And so there's. The weird part, too, is this is why I gave him as a DPR. He's number one in true pass set win percentage.
Yeah.
So, like I said, if you give him a true third down, it is 3rd and 8, you need to watch out for R. Mason. Other situations is where it's not great. So, he's kind of middle, too, in rush percentage. I'll show this in a little bit, and you'll kind of see how often these guys are actually pass rushing or how often they're dropping. And it'll kind of teach you a little about their scheme. He's only truly rushing about 83% of the time. At the height, I mean, these guys are all at 98, 99%.
Yeah.
So he's dropping a lot and doing linebackery things and covering flats and doing simulated pressures. So he does unique stuff in the schemes. But so he has the highest true pass set win percentage, but overall he's ranked 26th out of all SEC edges in run defense. He's struggling kind of there. And amongst our top 10, that would put him at 3rd to last.
Yep.
In run defense. And I think if he's 6'4", things change a little bit. But R. Mason Thomas, 3rd down, a problem.
Yeah, I've seen him get big brothered in the run game. He just doesn't have the length or the power to separate and keep a guy off of him. And something to keep in mind when we play them. In the Red River. All right, Cassius Howell, Texas A&M. So it's interesting. Yeah. They had 3 guys drafted from the defensive line, all pretty high. I thought on like kind of pure passing sets, this was their best pass rusher.
So did I.
He is not always great against the run. I'm not sure if that's coaching or like something he needs to address or if it's physical ability. He's pretty powerful. He looks and he's built like Baron Sorrell, but he doesn't have Sorrell's sort of toughness in some areas. But I think he's a good pass rusher. He's one of these guys that I think he had 4 sacks, but
yeah,
he literally was 3 inches away from having like 10. Like he's that kind of guy. He does affect the game. He does affect the quarterback. He had a sack against us where he ran through Jaden Blue when Jaden Blue opted not to block him. So kind of a cheap sack, but hey, it still counts. I think he's good. I think he's the I think he's more of what Elko wants on the edge. Elko likes speed and quickness on the edge and length. He doesn't necessarily want 290-pound defensive ends. So
yeah, like last year. So he's also scheme interesting. He's only rushing 72% of the time.
Yeah, that's he dropped a bit.
So he drops a lot. Only 4 sacks, not great. But he's good in his true pass set win percentage. He's third in that. So if it's time to pin his ears, he's capable. And then he's ranked 10th in the SEC against the run. 21 tackles, and he has an 8% stop rate. Stopping people at or behind the line, which is, you know, middle of the pack. But I think this year, when he's kind of the premier guy as well, we'll see a difference there, because he didn't have the first rounders ahead of him that they kind of had to play. So Cassius Howell, somebody to look out for at Texas A&M for sure.
I think where he may have some issues is on the other edge. A&M had to go get a guy, TJ Searcy from Florida. And what's really fun about researching like my preview book is that you get all the perspectives. And so at Florida, they're like, hey, TJ Searcy read the writing on the wall. He's being pushed out for these guys. And then at A&M, they're like, we scored TJ Searcy over Florida. And, you know, TJ Searcy's not been very good at Florida. So same deal, Jack Pyburn, who's their other edge at Florida. Yeah. He went to LSU, and everyone's like, we got Jack Pyburn. It's like, well, Florida wanted him out. So
I wouldn't have wanted Pyburn out. Pyburn was a fun player, and he was like a Sam, and he was aggressive. I liked Pyburn bringing them.
Yeah, pass rush.
Well, he was better Jet Bush. Like that. Like that's exactly how he played.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you weren't going to get a pass rush out of him, but he's going to do everything else, you know.
That's true. Yeah, Florida wanted some guys someone who can threaten across from Tyreek Sapp because they feel like that they can have a withering pass rush. So that's why they're trying to turn over that edge room. So it'd be kind of like an Illinois guy last year taunting us about getting Terrence Brooks. And Texas fans are like, all right, man, good luck.
All right, before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from our sponsor. In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy Sports and Outdoors and online all the way through July 4th, this Friday, guys. Make sure to head over to Academy and take advantage. Exclusions do apply. Visit academy.com/discount for details. All right. Next up. Trey Moore.
This might be cheating. I'll let the chat decide. I'm going to go back, and I do want you guys' opinion. I told you not to argue with me. You can argue with me. He's technically be playing linebacker for us. However, I think he's going to rush the passer. And if you listen to any of Steve Sarkisian's interviews, Trey Moore is still going to rush the passer. The difference is he's going to be doing it from off the ball. He's still going to be doing it from the edge. We're going to kick Ethan Burke inside. We're going to have Trey Moore opposite Colin Simmons. And we're going to tell, you know, the two pit bulls that there's a stake tied to the quarterback. And Trey, man, he does some really good things. The clip that I included, I searched because I wanted to not find just a traditional sack. It's what he does best, which is the pocket gets a little disrupted. And then Trey runs through blockers, weaves through a bunch of people, pursues, and then actually is the guy that brings down the quarterback or tips the ball or hits him as he releases it. That's what he's the best at, just running people down, right?
Well, that was UTSA too. We were a little worried about that because when we went back and looked at all of Trey Moore's sacks at UTSA, almost none of them are just beat the tackle, sack the quarterback. It's you know, overrun, quarterback decides to dance a little bit, Trey follows up. And like we said, those opportunities aren't as clear as the normal pass rushers. But you're right. Once it gets mixed up or the quarterback's holding the ball too long, Trey will find them type of thing.
Also, interesting statistical discrepancies. You probably have noticed this. I noticed this too. And so now I have to, because I'm a dork, when I watch games, I make my own notes of who I thought got the sack or whatever. So PFF, they say Trey Moore had 8 sacks. If you read ESPN, they say it had 5.5. If you read TexasSports.com, they say he had 6.5. I tend to give the sack not to the guy who finished off the sack. I give it to the guy who initiated the sack. So in my book, he had 8 sacks, and he did not log a sack until November, Connor.
So I was going to say, well, look at his numbers. They're kind of whatever. And but if you just did half the season forward, he would be in this category. It's the first half that's like holding him back, you know?
Well, and what's interesting is once he registered a sack in every game.
Yeah.
And that was against the hardest part of the schedule. So, hey, if you only take the hardest part of the test and you score well, that's good. He also had a lot of pressures. And also Trey did a lot of different kinds of stuff. So we asked him to do other things than just blindly rush the passer. The other thing to know about Texas and the structure of our defense, other than 3rd and 13, we don't let our edges just sprint up the field like maniacs.
Yep.
And like they have to play it honestly. You got to play the run. And then when you realize it's a sack, then you start your pass rush. So that's a little different from some other players and some other schools and their philosophy. So I love Trey Moore. If you say he's a linebacker, he can't be on this list. All right, that's fine. I'll deal with it. But Trey Moore makes my list because it's my list.
And then and this is a Texas fan site, all right?
Yeah.
Also, man, Texas can have Anthony Hill and Brad Spence. So, like Paul said, Trey Moore rushed the passer only 81% of the time. That's like bottom four. So he's doing a lot of dropping. So he has the worst true pass set win percentage. Mm-hmm. Down at 10%. R. Mason Thomas wins at 31%. So like kind of what we're saying, Trey's not just your lineup, beat the tackle with a move, quarterback's on the ground guy. And so you're seeing that. So other things have to happen for Trey Moore to shine, which is always going to lower your numbers, right? Like quarterback has to start moving, holding the ball, that kind of stuff. So Trey's not great there, just lining up and winning. Regardless, he puts up 8 sacks. So that's tied for second with a bunch of guys. So that matters too. Where Trey is weakest, according to PFF, he's second to last in run defense. So he'd be ranked 29th out of all the SEC run defenders. And so with a low stop percentage, he has the lowest stop percentage at 3.4. So he's not stopping runs at the line or behind it. But what's interesting is I don't think that shows Trey setting the edge. I don't think that shows Trey being responsible, understanding the scheme. There was a lot of times where he would clap the edge and be exactly where he needed to be. You know, that's not going to show up on the stat sheet. So I don't, whenever his run ranking's low, you know, PFS might be seeing other things, but it's not, he's doing his job and he's responsible, and that's got to matter too.
Yeah. One thing I'll say with PFF, there's really good stuff they do. Sometimes you'll see something that's just off from what you've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think you nailed it there. I saw multiple instances last year because I went and reviewed everything. And it's interesting. Your perceptions of the team, even in real time, change. And then you go back and you go, oh, wow, yeah, that guy was good at that. Or, wow, I didn't realize how bad this guy was at this. Trey Moore sets the edge all the time. I never saw him as a liability. And I saw him repeatedly sort of set the table for David Benda or Anthony Hill to make the tackle. So that's what I want from my edge. They don't always have to make the play.
Yeah, and PFF has to grade numbers, right? There's no category for set the edge properly.
You know? They can't. So the reality, their little reviewer can't sit there and be like, that was a good edge set.
Yeah, and so the reality is they have to combine their numbers into tangible things, right? And Trey's second to last behind R. Mason Thomas in tackles. So if you're low in tackle, if you're low in all this stuff, low in stop percentage, low in tackles, then of course it's going to affect your overall run defense grade. Even though as viewers watching Trey, we're like, that's what you're supposed to do. He didn't make the tackle, but he allowed the other guy to make the tackle. But once again, you can't quantify that. So that's where it is with Trey. So Trey has a little bit of, I'd say Trey's the weakest numbered guy across the board. On here, even besides sacks, high end sacks, but not super effective on pure pass rush and not super effective stat wise on the run game, even though we just explained why that's not 100% accurate.
Flushers and chasers. He is not a flusher, but he's a chaser.
For sure.
Colin Simmons is both a flusher and a chaser.
Yep. Yeah. Colin Simmons will flush you, then chase you if he wants to. All right. Joshua Josephs. Now, this is a fun player, too. 6'3", 245, well-rounded player as well.
This is a guy no one knows about because Tennessee loaded defensive line room, including James Pierce, who was a first-round draft pick. He's the edge from Tennessee that ran a 4.4 in the combine. His natural position, Josephs, is behind Pierce. So he was sort of a rotational player for Tennessee. When he went into games for the Vols, his play was indistinguishable from Pierce. And Pierce was, you know, a first rounder, as I said, with these crazy physical gifts. Josephs just does everything right. This is his senior season. He's going to break out and he's going to get drafted. And I think he's going to get drafted pretty high. He's not very big, but man, he just does everything correctly. And for his size, he's actually amazing against the run. He's really long.
Yep.
And he uses his arms well. He gets blockers off of him. I've seen him control blockers who are 100 pounds heavier than him. And the guy just blows me away. And I don't think the average fan, even pretty good SEC fans, really know who this guy is. But put him on your radar.
For sure. And yeah, he didn't have great like numbers this year. 2 sacks, 3 hits, 17 hurries. Nothing crazy as far as hard production. He's middle of the pack, true pass set, win percentage, about 20%. So 1 out of 5 times he's going to affect the quarterback. But what's, like Paul said, he's number one in the SEC in run defense. So you're getting a player that's really well-rounded here. Buy stock in this guy before this season, especially if you're getting a chance now to like truly start, you know, you're behind Pierce. And he does it all. He's a well-rounded player, and that matters to me. DPRs are great, but they're only good, you know, they're great on third downs, but what are you doing first and second? And Josephs is going to hold you down. Having a player like Josephs gives him the chance to pass rush on third down. Because he can stop you on first and second. All right. So here was Paul, one of Paul's crushes. I think last year you were a big Army. You liked Army last year too, right?
I like Army every year.
You like him every year, but I think it was this last year you would talk about him a lot. So Georgia picks up the Army transfer, Madozi here.
Yeah, Elo Madozi. So he is a guy who played for Army. He played sort of an outside linebacker position for them that drops quite a bit and does like a lot of other stuff other than just rush the passer. But he still had 6.5 sacks. He's crazy quick on film. He's ridiculously long. Like his arms touch the ground when he's standing straight. He's that kind of guy. He's a little light. Obviously, when you're at West Point, you've got other obligations other than football. So he's not just, you know, eat, lift, think football all day. He's got other stuff going on. Georgia went and got him. I think he's going to be good. I think he's really raw, though. And I think he may not have the physical strength to fully unlock his quickness as a pass rusher. To me, it is instructive that they did go out and get him. Because remember, Georgia lost 2 first-rounders on the edge. Right. And then Damon Wilson transferred out to Missouri. So this could be one of the weaker Georgia edge rooms we've seen.
Yeah.
That said, since they put their edges in the NFL every year, I don't know if that's like a huge insult, right?
Yeah, but comparatively, I mean, we just hope, right?
Yeah, we hope.
So same thing, exactly what Paul said. He's only rushing 71% of the time. That's the lowest of all the 10 edges. So 30% of the time he's doing some other type of linebackery work and dropping into space. Still was able to get 7 sacks. Now, keep in mind, this was, he was playing an Army during this. You might see kind of a Trey Moore adjustment period here, which will be interesting to see. He wins all right, 21% of the time in true pass sets. And then number 9 overall in the SEC in run defense, if added to the SEC. Once again, these are Army stats in those leagues. So we'll just see what the adjustment is. But as far as this kind of like being Georgia's projected top edge, okay, you know, because he's bottom third out of these top 10 guys, and Paul has him ranked, you know, dead last. I'm good with this. I'm good with this. Hopefully he's not too much of a killer.
One thing to keep in mind, Georgia has their obligatory 5 stars, and they've got a redshirt freshman and a true freshman.
somebody's going to rise.
Who will rise. Like, one of those dudes will rise. But I will say this. Kirby Smart, kind of like us, he doesn't just let his edges sprint up the field. So they have responsibilities in the Georgia defense. They have to play the run. They have to be gap sound. So Georgia typically doesn't have these freshman phenoms. You know, they may have guys who are physically able to just rush the passer, but they require you to do a lot of stuff just like we do with our edges. So keep that in mind. That may inhibit their ability to sort of get the freshman superstar Dylan Stewart type.
Cool. Paul, let's tell the people where to get their mortgages, man.
It's another superstar. His name's Gabe Winslow. He's good at everything. If added to the SEC, Connor, the number one mortgage guy in the SEC.
No doubt.
You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Y-Gabe, over 20 years in the industry. He's got a law degree, former National Merit Scholar at the great University of Texas, our beloved alma mater. And he's just damn good at what he does. He's so sharp. I was talking to him the other day and asked him about interest rates and what's going on. And he went into a 20-minute lecture about the MBS market where I learned a lot of stuff that I had not known about. He's just really on it, really sharp. If you want a quote monkey, go pick up your phone and call your bank and get the guy if he happens to be there in the office at the moment. He's not at his four-hour lunch or whatever, or not leaving at 3. There's a reason they call it banker's hours, Connor. Or you can call Gabe at any time on a weekend, whatever's going on. He's going to pick up the phone and he's going to start talking to you and figuring out your financial situation. And he's going to be your best possible partner in the biggest financial decision of our lives, Connor, buying a house.
Thank you for supporting, Gabe. You're the man. Okay. So On3 dropped. It's weird now because On3 Rivals merger, dude. So it feels weird. Whenever I go to the player profiles, it goes to Rivals now. And so it's getting used to. And then On3, like, recruiting account became Rivals. So, like, you know, Justin was like retreating Rivals. It just, I'm not used to it. You know, we're not used to switching it up. So officially everything's done with the On3 and Rivals merger. On3 is going to handle college sports news. Of course, keep your fan sites and stuff, but Rivals is now the spot for all recruiting. So the national recruiting guys have gone to Rivals from On3. And then as far as, like, you know, whenever you look up what's this guy's star rank, it'll take you to Rivals now. So it's a new world. Shannon Terry, baby. The guy doesn't stop. All right. Let's look at projected playoff rankings. So they think the first round is going to be number 5 Texas versus number 12 Boise State.
We didn't get a bye?
Nope.
Damn it.
But I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this. Because this to me is a true number 5. Like, what they were doing last year was nonsense. Like, you weren't getting rewarded for having your high non-bye seed. You would end up playing, like, you know, a top team. So, because they were forcing G5 champion and Big 12 champion up. So that's what's going to be nice about this, that if you get a 5 seed, you should realistically get a true low seed team.
So they have 3 SEC teams total?
Yes. Oh, not counting their
– Did Georgia get the bye? Is that the deal?
Georgia's going to get the win here and move on. So Oregon versus LSU, that'd be a sick matchup. We're not really, the odds of this being correct are very little, but it is interesting to see, like, you know, Utah in the mix, that kind of stuff. Meaning that they would have to have won the Big 12 because there's no auto buys. So Clemson at number 6. Huh. I think they'd be higher if they win their league. Alabama, we expect to be back in the mix. Do you think Miami's going to get the playoffs?
SMU got in last year, and Miami's probably pretty clearly the second best team in the ACC. So, yeah, they've got a decent shot.
So they think it ends up with, in the quarterfinals, Ohio State versus Texas.
We got to play them again.
Yeah. Oof.
But we're going to play them in Texas.
Dude, I hate when you play good teams. Well, it depends. If you win, it's – it's not that fun because you know the odds are maybe you'll lose next time. You don't get to sit on it. But if you lose, you're like, we'll see. Well, that wasn't even a real game. We'll see you at the end of the season, you know?
Well, the good news is we get to play Ohio State's receivers on the turf at Arlington, which is fast track. So that's great. That'll be awesome.
Yeah. They had Notre Dame at number one versus number nine Oregon. Notre Dame, by the way, recruiting at a different level now.
Yeah.
They're taking some good players, and Freeman's just doing a great job there. So their future is bright as well. This is not just the hang. This is kind of the next tier for Notre Dame.
Why don't you produce a Notre Dame podcast and YouTube show?
I'm just telling people, look, whenever they steal a couple guys from us, it's because they're at a different scale now.
No, that's true. They really are. I mean, Marcus Freeman, even when you watched him play last year, you saw him play against A&M and you're like, oh, Notre Dame has different dudes now. Like, that's
for sure.
They look different.
Yeah. And then they have number two Penn State at Alabama. Man, I just kind of lazily like rejected the idea of Penn State because it just, I don't know, just being lazy, right? Like, Penn State doesn't win. It's like, well, when we were going through the rounds of like first round potential players and they had like four or five,
I was like, all right, more of probably any team in college football.
Yeah. And so
their schedule is favorable.
Yeah. And so it's like, I was looking at Penn State and I was like, okay, I see why. I see why they have.
I'd be shocked if they're not in the playoff, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. Georgia at number three. So they still think Georgia's going to win the SEC and then Texas will be second. We'll see. And then they think it ends up with Ohio State beating us, Notre Dame versus number one, and then Penn State and Georgia.
And then Georgia, Ohio State.
Yeah. I mean, none of this is crazy.
Texas A&M get to go to the ReliveQuest Bowl?
I was going to say, let's see where our brothers at A&M are, how they're doing. The Cure Bowl. Let's do a little search here. Yes, the ReliveQuest Bowl, Tampa, Florida, Texas A&M versus
Indiana. I did not see this list before. Nailed it. That's awesome.
That's awesome, dude.
And they get to play Frank Cignetti, who's going to talk a bunch of trash to them.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
That'll be fun. And that's the type of game that A&M would lose.
They have Colorado go into a bowl. Interesting.
Yeah, versus Florida State.
Interesting, as you like to say, Connor.
I didn't. The thing that I thought was interesting about it was Utah getting in the mix there. I also haven't seen a fanship that's like so dismayed by their conference affiliation. Utah fans hate being in the Big 12.
They do?
Dude, they hate it. Like,
well, how do you know this? I didn't know this.
Because they're everywhere on Twitter. Like, because constantly, you know how Big 12 media has a complex. So like they're constantly like retweeting Utah and be like, well, if you don't want to be here, then leave. But it's constantly just Utah fans that are like, this conference sucks. We're better than this conference. Basically, they got rid of Texas and then they got Utah in there that just immediately came in with the same energy, you know?
I agree with Utah, I just would love to know, like, what's the basis for this?
They're just, the Pac-12 was prestigious to them, you know, and it had the academic prestige, you know.
Cooler, like, road travel and sure. Like, away games.
That's what they hate. Like, they just don't like, you know.
They don't want to go to Waco.
Yeah, they don't want to be playing in the plains. And so Utah fans are just that's hilarious, awesome. Dude. So they're trying to get to other places. What do you think about Texas State to the Pac, dude?
That's cool. Good for them.
It's great. I have family in San Marcos. So they were telling me it's gonna be really great for business. That part too. The problem is
they're like Texas's Arizona State.
Yeah.
So it's a great fit.
Yeah, dude. And so, but also what's interesting, right? Like I wrote about this in the Dark Decade video I made where like, you know, Baylor and TCU didn't mean anything in the past. So, we would have Mack Brown era. We would just take, you know, first through third string, whoever we wanted. Then Baylor and TCU comes on the screen. They start picking off our second and third strings, right? And for starters for them. And then so we slowly start kind of losing our depth to like a Baylor or TCU caliber. But now it's like everybody's up in the ranks. Like Houston's in the Big 12. You have Texas, even Texas State. Now, is Pac-12 a power conference? No, it's a G5. They invited the whole G5 up. So it's to me, it's this is not a power conference just because you join it. Those are all G5 teams. But it is interesting to me that, like, that pitch works now. SMU is up. Texas State is up. So, like, what I'm annoyed by is like now we have eight schools who can take that third stringer that would have popped for us as a senior will be a starter for them, you know? And so it's, I'm interested with that because really now you just have like UTEP, Sam Houston State. There's really not this like really low tier anymore. Everybody's moved up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also, could they become the best G5 just because you're combining both basically a bunch of Texas and California? Like,
yeah.
Boise's going to join them, right?
I have no idea.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know either. Maybe I should know.
Yeah, I have no idea. But it's like, it is going to be interesting. We'll see at Texas State. They, you know, historically don't have a ton of football buy-in. The games are pretty light. But what Kenny's done there, and this is almost a Kenny, like G.J. Kenny's work, you know. I don't know if they were just going, you know, one and whatever. Who knows if they get the invite. But it's going to be really big for the city. But I am interested because basically everyone around us now is can be qualified as a power conference, even though Pac-12 is not a power. It's a fancy G5 right now. But
yep.
But maybe this will make them less G5, right? There's a part of just like your classification kind of boost the player you can get. And if look, kids are going to come to San Marcos and they're going to like it. You know, so it's a great little town. So really we're just kind of waiting for, I guess, like the next tranche is like UNT, you know, like we're out of people to bring up before you start getting into the like UNT realm of it.
Well, there's more and more teams joining the FBS. So I don't know if you saw, used to be 134 teams and now it's 136. Kennesaw State joined last year. Sam Houston State joined 2 years ago, right? So everyone's trying to go up from the FCS to the FBS. I don't even know if that's a great idea, but if you're running a university and you don't really have anything to hang your hat on, you're just sort of an open admissions college, you know, relying on people going into debt to attend it. I guess you want to have like a sport so you can pretend to have like some sort of real university environment. But
well, they also, what was weird is like the whole thought of this when Texas and OU were going to go to the SEC is like we were going to destroy the sport. And you know, maybe, but what I've seen is a lot of teams got opportunities they didn't have. Like we have, you know, 10 teams in the Pac-12 that would have just been historic G5s. So like a lot of, there's been actually like, to me, and you said more people joining the FBS in total, it seems like there's actually been more opportunity because now these leagues have to bring teams up. Now their talent's getting poached and that kind of stuff. I get that. But as far as like team opportunity, like more G5s have exposure today than they did pre-movement.
One thing in Texas State's favor as well, keeping with their student culture, do you remember their bowl game? They drank all the alcohol on their half of the field by halftime, and then they went to Rice's side of the field and drank all their alcohol.
Which makes
sense. They went over there. And they all, so basically, they are doing announcements like, there is no more beer.
Yeah.
Please stop going to the concessions and demanding beer.
They're fun, man. The river culture. I'll be there for a week starting Saturday. My grandma's from San Marcos. So I'll be running around, man. I'll be out there. I love San Marcos. It's a great little town. Okay. So that, but shout out. That's great for Texas State and good for the city of San Marcos to be in the mix until they steal some recruit I like. And then I'll be upset. Okay. This is a quick thing we'll do. I just want to show you the ESPN did a mock first round draft. So let's look at this. And then we'll notice there's, share this tab. Their mock first pick is Cade Klubnik for Clemson. The tackle.
Klubnik more like a good college quarterback than a guy that projects the NFL?
Yeah. Yeah. It's matchup dependent. It's spread dependent. It's, you know, the system, it's very systematized. Garrett Riley. So he can move. I mean, he's awesome, Westlake kid, right? Bright kid. So I don't doubt that he'll be able to understand the seam in the system. But this, as far as like a pure quarterback skill set, this is not a pro system that he's in. So there might be a little bit of tricky part. Also, when you're the first overall, you're going to a horrible team. So the odds you even survive are awful anyways. It's really a sad system for quarterbacks. You almost want to be a late first round quarterback so you have a real chance. But Cade at number one, I mean, who else are you going to pick number one at quarterback? This is a fair thought. Tackle at Miami, Number three is going to be TJ Parker from Clemson. Clemson has a lot of first rounds here. You'll see this.
Yeah.
And then they have Anthony Hill going number four to the Jets. And it's Texas' only first rounder this year, which I think is fair right now.
Who else could it be?
I was going to say, who else could be in the first round?
Gooseby? Now you,
who'd you say?
Gooseby.
Gooseby, right? But you'd have to – those kind of players, like, you know, Anthony Hill's been on the radar. This is his third year of being on the national radar. Gooseby can absolutely get in the first round through good play this year, but the national media is not up on Gooseby yet. But they will be.
We wouldn't really have another first rounder, would we?
Yeah, we're kind of waiting that next year. That next year is Arch and Colin and all of that. So we're kind of in a weird bridge here where we don't have a ton of first round, even available first round guys. Five, Caleb Downs. Okay, sure. Peter Woods again for Clemson.
Yep.
So that's Clemson with three first round picks and the first six players right now, just so we're aware. Is it really going to play out like that? Probably not. But this is why you need to buy Clemson stock. And people are kind of waking up there. Edge from Miami. Jordan Tyson, Arizona State. We were after old boy. You know, that was our top receiver target in the portal. But he's a loyal guy, and he stayed. All right, Caden Proctor, the Bama tackle. Okay, more tackles.
That's definitely a projection. But
for the Utah tackle or Proctor?
Caden Proctor. He's still got – I mean, obviously the traits are amazing, but he still has to just get better at football.
Yeah. Let's see. I think Cade will be in the NFL for a while. I think the mental eval is there. My only issue is the system fit is not very NFL-y. But also
– Yeah, I'm actually not debating whether he's an NFL quarterback. I'm debating whether he's the number one pick.
Yeah. My thing too – but also coordinators are getting a little less stubborn and kind of adapting their scheme. But, yeah, the trick is if he's the first overall pick. Manny Muhammad could play himself into the first. I think Muhammad would be second round. Do you think he could play himself into the first with traits?
No.
Same here. I think it's kind of second round is his ceiling. Gooseby and D Moore. So DeAndre Moore has gotten a lot of that like quiet behind the scenes of like, man, he's going to test better than you think. So you're going to have.
I'll say this. No one had Golden in the first round.
Correct.
This time last year.
And the big thing, too, with Moore, right, Arch is a better deep ball thrower. So his stats are going to look better. If he just doesn't drop like a silly pass and ding himself, if he's consistent with his hands, he's going to have the speed. More importantly, he's going to have the opportunity. He's going to have the quarterback that likes to throw it to him. And they said he's going to test better than you realize, meaning that, you know, he's going to have a high 40 time. Kind of like Golden or an A.D. Mitchell that you don't expect necessarily. All right. The Utah tackle. And then real quick, they have Nussmeier. So Nussmeier is one that could be the first quarterback.
Yep.
LSU. Wow. So Utah has two tackles.
Yeah, they have a really good offensive line.
I didn't realize that. That's cool.
That's why they think they're too good for the Big 12.
Here's your boy, Falk to the Cowboys. I'm down with that. For Auburn, man, Antonio Williams, wide receiver, Clemson. This is the fourth Clemson player in the top 14 picks.
Yeah, and their cornerback will go in the first as well, probably.
Yeah.
Burrell. Oh, there he is, down at the bottom. Bengals.
Lenora Sellers.
Oh, so this Patrick Payton? No. Like, that seems unlikely to me.
Okay.
That's surprising. He had a huge drop-off at Florida State when they lost all those NFL guys around him. Last year, Patrick Payton made no game impact.
But is he a traitsy guy? Is he just like,
Yeah, but it's interesting to me that when really good players left around him, he sort of disappeared. So he'll be the guy at LSU. We'll find out, I guess.
Paul, this continues my thesis that the idea that running backs don't matter is kind of over. In the NFL, it used to be like, don't even touch him in the first round. You're a dummy. And just with Bijan, Genty, Gibbs, the running back seems to be back. Hampton, the running back seems to be back in the first round now. Now, not super high, but the running backs are kind of back in the mix. Teams are kind of ebbed and flowed from overvaluing them all the time to saying they don't matter. And now they're kind of just, hey, that's a really good running back. We need to evaluate elite running backs versus just the position as a whole.
Yeah, probably it helps too if you are varied in your skill traits as a running back, not just a pure runner. You know, if you can catch the ball, stuff like that, that matters as well.
Keenan at Bama, inside LT Overton, who we discussed. Stowers at Vanderbilt, I'm down with that. He was a quarterback at Geyer in high school, so he had that kind of...
One more Aggie quarterback, right?
Yeah. So he went to A&M for a bit, New Mexico, with Pavia, and then there. So Stowers is a good player.
There's Tyreek Sapp down there.
Yeah, Peyton, Oregon, Clemson. So there's the cornerback. So five first-round talents projected for Clemson. That's not good. Like Clemson could, and these are at power positions, right? These are like a quarterback, outside receiver, edge, corner. Like these are first round players at first round positions. Like with this kind of stuff, I mean, you could see Clemson winning it all.
Well, I have January. I mean, I've been talking about Clemson for a while. I have January and February bets on Clemson to win more than 9.5 games, to win the ACC, and to win the national title, and to go to the playoffs.
You got Clemson on over 9.5. I would take that all day, dude.
Yeah, well, when I got it, it was good odds as well. Now it's like -170, so it's not even worth it. But yeah, I think Clemson's loaded. I think people are seeing what I see. The other thing I want to point out to people, all the Florida names at infrastructure positions, offensive line, offensive tackle, center, defense, you know, edge. This isn't DJ Lagway, Jaden Baugh, like those, the running back. They're not in the draft yet. So Florida is a team. Don't sleep on those guys. They're going to be really talented. They're going to have dudes in the trenches. And that trip to Gainesville is not going to be pleasant. It's the week before OU. And, you know, I promise you that's going to be a brawl. That's going to be an awesome game.
Well, and they're going to be working all summer on us because we embarrassed them last year too. So, you know, you got like the bitter taste in your mouth because we were just putting up points on Florida. But what Paul's saying here is this is not all DJ Lagway, what's going on at Florida. You need to pay attention. You need to pay attention to how you win, and that's the trenches.
They're rehauling everything there and they're leveling up. So yeah, but our laugher last year in Austin is not representative of what we'll see.
Yeah. Texas takes a step back in our chase of portal. Hey, how many first round Sooners you got on here, dog?
I haven't seen any, but
where are they? Where's the Oklahoma first rounders?
When Venables is fired, are there any guys off the roster that you want?
Yeah, let us know, dude. I actually do think you guys are going to be improved this year, but we're having fun. I'm actually, as a college football fan, excited to watch you guys. As a Longhorns fan,
I'm excited to watch their decisions. They've got Jim Nagy right running their personnel. They fired Venables from that role. They also fired Venables from hiring coaches because Venables did not hire Arbuckle. But Jim Nagy went out to a bunch of these different small schools. And just basically, he used to run the Senior Bowl, as you guys might know.
Yeah.
So he understands like traits and what translates to the higher levels of FBS, higher levels of the NFL. So they went out and got these traitsy kind of guys. And I want to see if they're good. Like, if they're good, that model is going to change college
football. I was going to say, that's so this one I'm watching OU closely because they're kind of moneyballing right now.
Yeah.
And if it works, then that's going to be a way of like, it's going to be like the spread for team management.
Yes.
It's going to be like the giant slaying approach. So that actually does matter. And he has a good eye, right? But like that Arkansas Pine Bluff receiver, that's a nice looking receiver. Like when we're talking about traits, you know?
So I wrote a big thing about this in my preview book about what OU is doing and how this can revolutionize college football if it hits. If he hits on these guys, because they also got all these guys on the cheap, Connor, because OU's got some bad contracts, right? So everyone knows about like Demonic Williams overpaying for him. They don't know about like Spencer Brown, who's the offensive tackle from Michigan State, where OU, he wasn't good at Michigan State and he wasn't good at OU. And OU basically bid against themselves for a guy that no one else was in. So point is, they flushed away a lot of money. And I think a lot of people that provided that money felt burnt. And so now Nagy's coming in and he's trying to get talent on the cheap and then obviously pay up for Mateer. I mean, Mateer is probably what, $2.5 million?
Yeah. And you get a coordinator that goes along with it. Because that's always my question, right?
Coordinator was key. Because you don't want
to
say,
you know, do you take Arbuckle if he's not tied to Mateer and vice versa?
Apparently he's like well regarded. So yeah.
He is. He is. But anytime you have a package deal, I'm always interested, like how much weight assigns to the player coach
type. Yeah, interesting.
You know? But Arbuckle, no, he's fun. And like I said, I've been watching a lot of Mateer the past week.
I watched a ton. It's really interesting. Like, I think he's going to be a huge upgrade for them. But like against the high elite defenses, I'm curious to see what they're able to pull off on offense.
Yeah, and how much a Hero Ball, like, you know, if he stays healthy all season, that's the big thing, you know.
We'll see a healthy Mateer. The question is whether, like, Alabama sees a healthy Mateer in November.
For sure. Great point.
Also, OU's offensive line is going to stink again. Not as bad as last year, but they're not going to be good.
All right. Quick NIL things. I just want to chat about this. So Ross Dellinger puts this out. This is from Open Doors. This is kind of the agency that handles a bulk of the marketing deals and stuff like that. This is just a chart of rev share allocations. So the first circle pie chart is going to be for Power 4. And you'll see that about 65% of the rev share is going to go to football. But they did make a note that in the SEC, this is about 80%. So it's funny that they particularly pointed that out. So these are just kind of quick charts of how things break down. So basketball will get around 20%, women's basketball at about 6.6, and then the other sports have to split 7.5% of the rev share. What's cool too at the bottom here, Paul, it'll show you the breakdowns of what they think by position. So they think of the rev share allowed, quarterbacks will be taking about 17% of that.
Mm.
Running backs will take about 9%, wide receiver about 15%.
Can you magnify that?
No, I cannot. Right. This one's a static graphic, or else I'd pull it up. So wide receivers at 15%, tight ends at 4.5%. Defensive line is the second highest next to quarterback, and they're at almost 14%. Linebacker almost 12%. Defensive back 13%. A specialist will take 1.5%. So
I'd like to overlay that with what the NFL does for their guidelines and just see what I bet the overlap's pretty much 1-to-1.
Yeah. It is, right? Because they're taking quarterback at 17%, second highest is offensive line, and tackle's going to take a bulk of that. And then defensive line. So it's quarterback and trenches. And then for the lines and then wide receiver. So this is very NFL-y, right? So you're going to pay your quarterback, you're going to play your wide receiver, you're going to pay your offensive tackle, and you're going to pay your edge.
Interestingly, though, we've learned in college football that if you're just a really experienced, like, six-year senior quarterback, that's valuable if you have the right surrounding talent, right?
Yeah.
Like, was Will Howard, like, great bus driver, one of the greatest forms of public transportation ever to play quarterback, you know, in a playoff. But everyone understood that this guy's like a fifth or sixth rounder in the NFL, right? The talent was around him. And he just was experienced enough to allow it to come to the fore.
Correct. The maturity was he could make everyone shine.
But I'm not paying him $4 million a year.
Correct. So, and also, man, with these rev shares, like, I guess you got to get forced, right? But, like, for instance, like an Arch at Texas, like, he wouldn't have to take a dollar of this if he didn't want to. I'm sure legally he has to. But that'll be the interesting part. Or theoretically, Arch says the Tom Brady method, I'm going to take a cut on my quarterback salary, divvy it up to my O-line or whatever. Meanwhile, my Red Bull sponsorship is going to make me $4 million anyways. So it's like, do quarterbacks that are already making a ton of outside corporate money spread the wealth, you know, or on the flip side, do you have a quarterback that's taking 25% of your budget because you had to pay him, you know, X amount to get him to wherever state over a typical school? So it will be interesting to see how these things kind of play out. And then finally, this is just the growth of the industry. This is all I kind of want to see here. This first column one, this is the year 2021. And then the column five is our current year, 2025 to 2026. And then this is projecting all the way through 2029. So collegiate is going to be the house settlement, right? So the revenue share. Collective is like your base stuff, your collectives are paying out, right? You know, Randy's landscaping service, that kind of stuff. And then commercial is going to be your Arch, Red Bull sponsorship, big name stuff. So what you're seeing is that the biggest piece of the pie is going to project forward is going to be your college payout. What you're seeing is the collective slowly die out in exchange. So you're just going to have your corporate sponsorship and you're going to have your collegiate. Now, these collectives are changing now. Someone asked earlier, what did you think about the email from One Fund? These collectives now are basically going to become marketing agencies that are going to link deals. So they're going to connect your tackle with, you know, whatever boot brand or whatever. They're going to be go-betweens, kind of brokers and agents going forward. But the reality, and Eric has said this a bunch, he calls it corporate NIL now, and that's the phrase you should think. You know, your local business guy is not going to be able to do this at scale going forward. You need your major brands to get involved here, Dr. Pepper, that kind of stuff going forward if you want to have really successful NIL. That's just the reality of it.
Yep.
Texas is in a good position for that. But this is where it's going to kind of matter, right? Like where you're located, your relationships, your alma mater. You know, if one of your alums, you know, owns X corporation, that's going to be helpful. But right now it's all about real deals. And they've also, the House deal has gotten rid of the 501c3, the nonprofit structure. That's not allowed anymore. So you can't be paid to do, you know, X community work. So that's a big part too. So right now, basically what they're saying is you got to get all your money from a corporation or your rev split at your school. But they expect the market to be at $3.15 billion by 2028.
Let's form an LLC, Connor.
I was going to say, Paul, it's our time to shine because this is a growing market. So yeah, you'll see. But you'll look, by 2028, they only think collectives will be responsible for $77 million. While this year, the collectives were responsible for $1.3 billion. That's an insane drop-off. That's, you know, less than...
The fourth column that's missing.
Yeah, well, we got to see the bags column.
Yeah, yeah, because unfortunately, I think the new era is going to be cover for some of that, right? You know how, like, if you're in a city that has legalized marijuana, it's also cover for illegal marijuana? You don't really you don't know where the guy bought that stuff that he's smoking next to the kid's elementary school. But yeah, I think that.
Well, Eric said yesterday, you know, he couldn't put his finger on it, but he believes that bags are back in the mix.
Agreed.
And it feels like that's the case as well.
Also, in our commercial stuff, this has to get reviewed, right? By the people that determine if this is a real deal, which is.
Yeah, but it's Deloitte. So they're one of the largest.
Judge is going to be like, who are you to judge that?
Here's also the incentive structure, right? They're one of the top consulting firms in the world. So they have $1 million contracts with all the major corporations.
Right.
They're not turning down Dr. Pepper's deal. Landscaping. Correct. So like what they're going to be able to do is squeeze out small market guys. Cause the last thing they're going to do, they have contracts with everyone just to go in there and be like, yeah, you should fire everyone.
Also we should be aspiring to get deals turned down.
Well, I asked Eric, I was like,
that makes sense.
I said, Eric, have we seen any rejections yet on yesterday's show? And he was like, no, but we want to be seeing, you know, a ton of rejections.
Exactly.
But yeah, there's also this perverse incentive structure where of course the major corporations aren't going to get their deals turned down because they have consulting contracts with everybody. So that's going to be, it's going to be interesting, but that's just the future of NIL. I know people don't like it, but this is also going to directly correlate to you getting that 5-star in 2 years. That matters. So you're going to have to pay attention to this. This is kind of like the salary cap in the NFL now.
I think we should open up a company store and then issue the players like Schrute Bucks or Chits, you know, West Virginia coal miners in like 1888.
Yeah.
And then you have like a board. Or, you know, Dave and Buster's. You know, at the end, you have your tickets and you can pick stuff.
Yeah. You want the Lamborghini?
Yeah, but we're still not live, right? Let's you and I open up an LLC where we open up this company store, and you can use tickets as means of exchange.
Me and Paul are the first federally indicted NIL collective.
Instantly, the Miami Hurricanes contact us. They're like, hey, we heard you guys got indicted. We like how you do things.
Paul, we got a 30 for 30 coming our way.
We got a 30 for 30 coming, baby.
It's going to be awesome.
Let's do it.
All right, chat. Thank you, guys. It was fun hanging out with y'all as usual. Paul, thank you so much. And y'all have a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. This was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors.